Welcome, councillors, members of the gallery and our council staff. I declare the meeting opened at 14 minutes past six, I believe. Can I ask you please to be upstanding for the council prayer? Lord, we humbly beseech thee to vouchsafe thy blessing on this council, direct and prosper its deliberations for the advancement of this area and the true welfare of its people. Amen. Please be seated. I'd also like to acknowledge the Wangal people of the Eora Nation who are the traditional custodians of this land. I would like to pay my respects to their elders, both past and present, and extend my respect to other First Nations people who may be present here. Just to remind you that there's a recording of the meeting, which is subject to the provisions of the Government Information Act of 2009 and are promptly made available for public review via the council website. I note there are no apologies, leave of absence, any declarations of interest by councillors. Councillor Hull?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, thank you. Yes, I need to declare an interest in two items. First being item number 99/22, the consent to Woodstock Childcare Centre lease. Its pecuniary interest is in the sense that I'm a customer of the centre, so I will be absenting myself from that particular discussion of that item. And secondly, item number 89/22, voluntary planning agreement, Burwood RSL. It's a less than significant non-pecuniary interest, really, because I'm just an ordinary member of the RSL, so I won't be taking any action in relation to that, as I'm not a member of any governing body as such, the RSL.
I don't know if an ordinary, but give possibly Tanya advice. I don't know if I'm still a member of the RSL, but I might as well declare it. I think I don't think. Yeah, we can't. Yeah, you can't get advice. Sorry, the staff or the chair can't give reply to that question. So it's up to the individual.
All right, then I'll do the same in regards to Build RSL as a social member of the club.
I might declare the same, but I'm not sure if I'm still a current member, but I have been a member, and I am present on some of the, with some of the board members on the ANZAC committee, council's ANZAC committee. Councillor Matter?
I'll do the same. I'm a member of the council, RSL. Yeah.
Ordinary member?
Yes. Yeah.
You started a wave, Councillor Holt. Councillor Crichton, you the same.
Thank you. I am a member of the ANZAC committee, of which some of the board members from Build RSL are part of the committee. So non-pecuniary,
any
non-significant.
You were just looking at me. we've got to sign you up to the RSL. Okay. So, declaration of political donations. I note the old declarations. There's a recording of the councillors voting, confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting. Being moved by Councillor Esper, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Speakers, put the motion. All those in favour, those against, declare that carried unanimously. Now there is mayoral minutes. So my first mayoral minute will be that council council requests the general manager to investigate the listing of the properties in the Appian Way as heritage items and to further seek advice on the question of whether the Appian Way conservation area could be lifted to a state significant status. Speakers, I'll put the minute. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously. My next minute is that Burwood Council, sorry, and these were two that I just did, that's why they haven't, and I think they're urgent. One was obviously the Appian Way was urgent because of the importance of that. The other one was in relation to timing and the Queen's death. So, and I didn't get to make the business paper. Burwood Council pays tribute and extends our deepest sympathies to the royal family on the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, who has been a trusted and guiding light over the last century. The Mayor writes to the Governor of New South Wales, Her Excellency the Honourable Margaret Beasley, expressing Burwood Council's condolences on the death of Queen Elizabeth II and passes on the community's gratitude for her service to country and Commonwealth. Also, Burwood Council wishes King Charles III health and happiness as he takes on his new role, and that Council endorses the proposal by Prime Minister Albanese and Premier Perrottet on the Queen Elizabeth II place, with construction beginning later this year, which will link the Domain Parklands to Macquarie Street. Speakers? Councillor Hull?
I just wanted to say I'm grateful to you, Mr. Mayor, for drafting that that minute, as it was something I had raised sort of informally with the Acting General Manager. I found myself a little bit time poor, so I would have drafted something myself, but in view of time constraints, I fully concur with the minute as you read it. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Councillor Hull. Any other speakers? Speakers against? I'll put the minute. All those in favour? Those against? Fair enough. Now, there's got to be a recording of voting, which is which is fine, but I was actually going to raise that in the Code of Conduct to see what other councils do, because it's not actually, I've found out, not mandatory in the Model Code. Recommended for best practice or for best practice, or you have to have it.
Practice.
So are other councils doing it?
Very right,
yeah. Okay. All right. Now, recommended doesn't mean you have to do it, though. Is that right? Thank you. So you had to record that, obviously. Okay. Next item is 85/22, which is the Code of Meeting Practice, of which it's suggesting a minor amendment. Is there a mover? They're moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Councillor Manor, can I make a suggestion that we add a part four on there? The council further investigates. So just to investigate, what other councils are doing, adjoining councils are doing, or councils are doing with regards to time limits for speakers and councillors and the chair at the council meetings. And three, also in relation to the recording of voting on items. So what used to happen in the past was if an item was adopted, it was adopted, and then you could actually say, I want my name recorded as voting against. So it just doesn't mean that all the minutes always have a whole list. Are you happy with that?
Yes.
Councillor Crichton?
Yes.
Speakers?
It's a question.
Yes, Councillor?
Is that working?
Just now, put it on. Just press again, no? See. Use Councillor Espas.
I've got green lights.
Is Councillor's working? Councillor Espas?
Okay, so just in relation to the order of the prayer coming before the acknowledgement of country, I just wonder if we could get, if I could understand the rationale behind that change.
Yes. Do you want to ask the General Manager? Or?
If I could, yes, please, through you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. The reason is purely past practice. A Burwood is a Burwood tradition to have the prayer as the first item on the agenda.
Oh. Just for further clarity, I actually raised that because as the General Manager suggested, and you probably noticed that I always start with the prayer, and that has been a long-held tradition at Burwood. And I think any meeting should be open with a prayer. It doesn't mean we don't open and acknowledge our Indigenous community, which is still important, but I think the actual opening of the meeting should be with a prayer. That signifies the opening of the meeting. And I don't. While the model code recommends the other way around, or suggests, it's not mandatory that you follow their order of business. Speakers? Sorry, any further questions, Councillor? Speakers for? Speakers against? Councillor?
I can't support the motion on that basis. I think as a principal, as a secular organisation, part of our local community's governance, I don't think we should be leading with prayer over an acknowledgement of country. And in fact, I think there's arguments to be made that a prayer should be replaced with a moment of reflective silence, so everybody can observe that in their own way. So on that basis, I won't be supporting the motion, and on that basis alone.
Any other speakers? Look, I'll just quickly say, and I understand your point of view and respect that. Unfortunately, I have a differing view. While I do respect our Indigenous communities, this got nothing to do with them. If it was in relation to, example, having to have the statement of ethical obligations before the prayer, I would be saying no. I think any meeting that we do anyway, it's always been long-held tradition here at Burwood, and I think there's still a large amount of our residents, or a large proportion of our residents, that still respect the value that we hold the council prayer. I think people respect that. I think people that come to the gallery respect that. I think it's still important. We've got many local religious groups locally that we respect all, and I think I've never had a complaint from any of those religious groups against saying the prayer, and I think it's important. I think it's important we keep that tradition. And I understand some people have a different view, and I respect that, but I think the opening of the meeting with a prayer, I think, still signifies that we hold that tradition. I think it's important. Councillor Manner, your right of reply. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? Did you get that? So I don't need to read it out every time, do I? Okay. Thank you, councillors. Next item is the election of the deputy mayor. So I think we need to just resolve how we have the election. So if I have a mover for the recommendation before I hand over to Fab for... It's been moved by Councillor Cryan, seconded by Councillor Espar. The speaker's for, against. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried unanimously. Now I'll hand over to Fab, the General Manager, for the holding of the actual election. So you're happy?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As the returning officer for this Deputy Mayor election, I can confirm that I've received one nomination form. It has been accepted by Councillor Manner and is in order. Are there any other nominations from the floor? There being no other nominations from the floor and only having one nomination, I'd like to congratulate Councillor Manner on being Deputy Mayor.
I'd just say a word.
Councillor?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, councillors, for nominating me to this position. I look forward to continuing to work alongside our Mayor, with the support of my fellow councillors and council, for the betterment of our community.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Next item, Councillor, and congratulations once again, and thanks for your support in the role. Next item is 87/22, which is Councillor Representation on Committees and Other Bodies. Do I have a mover? Been moved by Councillor Crichton, seconded by Councillor Esper. Can I just suggest, Councillor Robinson had a discussion with me, and we don't have an alternate for the Burwood Sustainability and Environment Advisory Committee, so if he's happy to accept to be an alternate on that.
Mr. Mayor, I understand that's bound by the terms of reference and not currently covered in that way. So Council may seek to move a motion to make a change to the terms of reference in order to accommodate that.
Oh, okay. So the motion is that Part 7 will include that Council change the terms of reference to 3, the Burwood Sustainability and Environment Advisory Committee, to allow for an alternate. It is also to change the terms of reference for the Burwood Local Traffic Committee, which is to allow the Deputy Mayor to be a delegate, because if the Mayor's away, there's no one then to chair the meeting. And then I think you don't have to change the terms of reference for the contract review panel for the GM, which will have Councillor Robinson, Hugo Robinson, as the alternate. Are you happy with that amendment, Councillor Esper? Councillor Crichton?
Yes.
Are we happy with that? Tanya? So it'll be the list as per the change of Part 3, that there'll be an alternate for the Burwood Sustainable Environment Advisory Committee and 8, Burwood Local Traffic Committee. Yeah, Councillor Robinson will be the alternate on that, and that Burwood Local Traffic Committee have the Deputy Mayor as a delegate as well, I think, because if I'm ever away or not there, there's no one to chair the meeting. And Councillor Robinson on the contract review panel. Can I just hold for a minute and just disclose that the state member has been speaking to me and actually rang today, and I made the suggestion that, and so now that we're changing terms of reference, I might as well include that on the sustainable committee to allow him to have a representative, because he's advocating for a community battery, to apply for a community battery, which could come under, I think there's a federal grant or state grant coming. So it makes sense to actually have a representative of the state member on the committee to be updated on, and to, you know, obviously talking about the grants and so forth and EV charging stations. So in changing the terms of reference on that Part 7, which is to allow an alternate, the terms of reference to also be changed to invite a state member's delegate. You might as well do it now, because he's going to send an email. It's going to come up on the Environment, Sustainability and Environment Committee. Councillor?
Can't they just send a representative to talk there without them being an official delegate on there?
He can. He's got a delegate on the traffic committee.
I'm aware who the delegate's going to be, and I know who it's on the other one. But I'm wondering if it's
on
gonna,
the traffic committee.
Yeah, I saw there was a list on there on the thing. But is there just a potential that they can, instead of putting it as an official delegate spot, where it just comes in as a guest, so to speak?
Yep. There is. Let's have a look at what they do at other councils. Maybe I flag it to investigate it, and then that way it can come back via, if he does end up writing to us, it can come back via a report or whatever, and then council can make a decision. Councillor?
I'm sort of following the line that Councillor Robinson's just raised there. You know, the Traffic Committee is a committee that I think you know, has a sort of a greater decision-making role. The Sustainability and Environment Committee is an advisory committee. You know, perhaps if we're having that discussion about bringing the local state members representative along, there's a flow-on discussion there about, you know, what the impact or what the implications are for that committee in terms of is it an advisory body or is it something else? I think that that's... I think that needs to be sort of part and parcel of the one conversation there. I support Councillor Robinson's suggestion that the state member representative would be welcome, should be welcome, you know, by invitation at any time, but they don't necessarily need to be listed as a delegate in a formal kind of a way. I don't think that committee has that stature.
Yeah, and look, I understand that, and that's why I'm happy for it to be looked at by staff. I don't see the harm in it, to be honest. Like... We've had committees in the past where we invited Charles Casselli, like when he was the state member and he was, you know, he had a rep on there. Like I said, we've got a rep on the traffic. The mere suggestion why it actually came up is because we were talking about there's a federal grant that could possibly come up. It's to sort of get the office support and sort of working on a joint program to get the grant. That was the intent, but happy to look at that part being not to change the terms of reference in suggestion to the state member's office that you know, the council committee staff, so Rita and her team will investigate the best way to have state or federal government support for the committee. That's all. It was to ensure that they highlight to us, because I wasn't aware that there's a federal grant process coming up, I think, in the next couple of months, he was saying. And that's why he wanted, the reason for ringing me is he wanted a contact to speak with council to work out, you know, what's council's position on it, if it was to be put in place, where would it be put, how it would work and so forth. So it's in early infant stages. And then obviously to sort of have some form of a process where it would be either the, you know, the state or the federal bodies working with council to get to put in a process where we get some joint funding. So you're happy for it to be that staff investigate? That'd
be great, thank you.
And in the past with committees, like, we've been very bipartisan. Like, when we had Craig here, we had, you know, we didn't have patrons of committees. I actually initiated having him as the patron for the Nashos committee at the time, and then the state member patron was the patron for the Sandakan committee and things like that, so...
Oh yeah, I want to make it clear it's not a partisan thing at all. It's just simply a matter of procedure, I think.
Yeah, I just didn't want it to come across that it was because of the actual phone call this afternoon that came through about, and I said, look, email me and we'll look at it. Okay, so we're happy with that. So I'll put the motion. All those in, sorry, speakers for, against. I'll put the motion.
Sorry, can I just ask a question, actually, Mr. Mayor? For those of us who are alternates on some of these committees, I'm alternate on a couple of committees there. I was wondering if it were possible for alternates to be notified of committee meetings, just in case we're available to attend.
Alternates usually turn up for a committee member that can't attend, but in saying that, I think I would have thought you would be getting notified anyway that there is a meeting. It just means that if the actual committee delegate is there, then you're there as just an observer. And if the committee delegate is not there, then obviously you fill in. But I would have thought you would be getting notified, but point taken. Well,
yeah,
is that right? Okay, we'll check that out.
Maybe we'll look.
Leave it with us. We'll see what the...
Well, the notification could definitely happen.
Yeah. But there's no use notifying a councillor as an alternate, then telling them, oh, you're notifying there's a meeting on, but you can't turn up. Anyway, we'll look at that. We'll clarify. All right, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? Declare that carried unanimously. Next item is 88/22, which is the voluntary planning agreement for 127 to 133 Burwood Road, Burwood. Do I have... Is there any speakers? Sorry? Tanya? Michelle? Oh, sorry, the speakers now is at public forum. I forgot it. It keeps changing. Okay, do I have a motion? Been moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Espar. Speakers? Councillor Crine?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to the Director of Planning.
Are you speaking or question?
Oh, sorry, it's question. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor, to the Director of Planning, can I just get a little bit more clarity around the remaining four parking spaces? In the report, it says that they'll be retained for servicing, in brackets, waste and loading. So by that definition, I take it that is not for designated visitors spot or a disabled parking spot. And then the second part of my question would be, just given the location on Burwood Road and Clarendon Place, which is heavily pedestrianised, and along Railway Parade as well, where would the logical place be for a person with a disability to be let out of a motor vehicle? Or maybe it's a question for the Traffic Committee.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll hand over to the General Manager.
I'll hand that over to our Director for the strategy.
Just talking that point, in terms of the spaces provided, that they would just be there for loading, unloading and general servicing during the day. You'll obviously may have seen some of the activations that the Burwood Chinatown are doing in the car park area at the moment. So on a sort of Thursday, Friday, Saturday evening and during special events as well, Clarendon Place is closed and it's used as a nighttime activation area as well. So certainly on a peak trading in the evening, those spaces wouldn't be made available and they would be turned over to dining areas. In terms of parking for people with disabilities, there are a number of spots designated on roads in around the town centre, in addition to spots, for example, in the library car park here as well. So it would be identifying those and directing people who need to use them to them. George also says we're about to implement a system that will have electronic monitoring of those disabled parking spaces so we can understand availability, turnover, how long they're used. Again, and that also allows us to manage whether or not we need more or whether we need to look at any possible enforcement as well.
Any other questions?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, to the Director.
GM, and then he'll...
Oh, my apologies. Yep. Can I just get some more clarification on DA 119/2021? Just a quick overview of that. And secondly, is there any sort of concrete plans as to where this money will go for public parking?
Thank you, Councillor. Over to Dylan.
Thank you, General Manager. In terms of that particular DA, that is a modification application to remove the requirement to provide the car parking spaces. And it would be made available for alfresco dining purposes associated with Burwood Chinatown. In terms of provision of the off-street parking spaces, that is often difficult within Burwood Town Centre, given its availability of land is limited and also expensive. So we have the flexibility to use the contributions in parking towards car parking in other ways. Often that's towards management of those existing parking spaces. Councillors might recall similar VPAs where we've used that funding for electronic monitoring of car parking. This VPA would allow us to do that. So it would be electronic monitoring of car parking spaces, potentially combined with displays in and around the town centre, directing people to availability of off-street parking, say, for example, on Elsie Street and the public car park there, and telling them how many spaces are available if the Emerald Square car park is full.
Sorry, can I just add, because Dylan wasn't here, part of that parking VPA money was used to actually expand the Emerald Street car park, which is right next to this, where you can actually come up, but it's underground. I think there was about 30 spots that we were able to buy, or we were negotiating to buy off that owner, because they were on the same level as council's public car park. So that's, I think it was used for that purpose. Some of it, I think, was.
So there's a potential for this money to be used to purchase spots.
That's what we usually, we put it in a pool. So we actually put it in a pool, and then we buy spots. So the last spots that we bought that we were negotiating, and Roberto's not here, I can see he's gone, he would have more info, was to actually buy extra spots in the Emerald Street car park. And then there was, prior to that, there was some spots that we purchased in the Elsie Street car park, where council already, it expanded its existing public car parks. Sorry, Dylan, that was pre-Dylan time. Did you want to add any?
Look, I'll just add that whatever money is contributed as part of this VPA goes into a reserve, and that reserve can only be spent on improving parking provisions within the LGA. So that could be additional signage as well as purchasing of parking spaces. And as the Mayor said, I think it was 25 parking spaces that we added to what we already had in the Emerald Square car park a few years ago.
Councillor Kutcher, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wonder what's our opportunity, or when will our opportunity be to review that? If we've got if this money's going into a pool that has to be used on the provision of parking, what's our opportunity to change that so that it could be used for other purposes? Such as, and I think, you know, given the proximity of this site to the railway station, to the bus interchanges, you know, the sort of high pedestrianised nature of the area, improving the pedestrian links between this place and, you know, the new metro, the shopping centre, the local shopping centres, all those sorts of things, rather than just simply kind of pooling all this money back into upgrading parking metres and purchasing existing parking spaces. I think we really need to be shifting away from, I mean, we need to be using...
Question. I got to keep it a question.
That is a question. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm not... I'm just trying to... I'll hand over to General Manager.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and it's something that we've already been talking about, but I'll hand over to Dylan for more detail.
Thank you, General Manager. Look, in terms of, I guess, specifics of our car parking policy, that is certainly something we'll be revisiting as part of our DCP review. So we'll be bringing to councillors over the next, I would say, 6 months, a range of policy options that we might adopt in relation to car parking, and that will certainly include looking at the current car parking standards we have and how they're applied in highly accessible locations.
Can I add a follow-on question to that, and then I'll come back to you? Is that okay? Because I actually think that's a really good point, Councillor. I think, you know, we've got to change our thinking, and my question is, so if council, why couldn't we just change the VPA policy to say that if we're foregoing public car parking space or private parking spaces, that the funding could be used in purchasing other car parks or other alternative transport modes? Like, it might be better cycleway access, might be better pedestrian links, it might be, you know, with the scooter trials happening, for example, might be better, you know, EV charging areas or things like that. I'm not sure. So why couldn't it just be a change in the VPA policy?
I think it's likely to be a combination of things. I think in the first instance, maybe to use Burwood North as an example, that there are parking standards put forward under the PR cuts, which are FAA reduced from what we currently have in our DCP controls. So not only are they reduced, they're also provided as a maximum standard. So it is up to an applicant to a degree what standard of car parking they want to provide, up to the maximum standard stated in the PR cuts controls as they're proposed. We would then be looking at, I think, a suite of different measures in terms of car sharing spaces, EV charging, to be provided as a blended solution within those developments, on top of, I guess, those active transport, public transport links that we'll be planning for within Burwood North, and I think also contemplating how they're brought into the Burwood Town Centre as well. So I don't think there's a single solution there. I suspect we'll be potentially capturing some of those improvements through other mechanisms, through our 712 contributions, rather than specifically the VPA policy that we have currently in relation to the reduction of car parking standards.
Okay, Councillor Cutcher, you had another question, I noticed. No?
My other question is, has Council considered in areas like this, or for example like Bell's Lane, where we're possibly trying to encourage shop owners to turn their shops around to face the laneway and activate those laneways, where if it's part of an activation process, then we provide some type of discount to revitalise an area?
There are some current discount provisions in the policy. I think it's a 20% discount where it's provided in some of the more smaller town centres, and I think we do have that provision in place. But again, I think that the revenue or the contributions we capture in relation to parking, I think we do need to review as part of that overall laneway small spaces activation strategy, because I think certainly for some of those smaller venues, it is quite a significant financial impost to provide that, particularly if you're small business looking to start up a new fledgling endeavour. So yeah, I think that will be something we'll be bringing back to this forum to discuss in the future.
Okay. I don't have a next question. I've got a comment, but I'll make that in discussion when there's. So the speaker, who moved that? Sorry. So, Councillor, did you wish to speak?
I just want to know that, you know, with submissions, this was on public exhibition. We didn't have any that were against this VPA.
Is this a question?
Dylan?
No, I can confirm there were no submissions received in relation to this VPA.
Okay, did you wish to speak? A seconder? Any other speakers? Speakers against? Look, can I just make a quick speak? I think it's really important. I think Councillor Cutcher raised a good point. It's possibly a good opportunity to review where we should be looking at other ways of spending that money. So it shouldn't just be parking-centric, like, you know, okay, we lost 10 spots, where are we going to replace the 10 spots? It's changing people's habits on possibly how to get there. And I'd really like to see some form of thinking around, if you've got a space like this within an area which is quite activated, like Burwood Chinatown, who have done a really good job and spent a lot of money, you know, really converting that area from what it was to what it is now, to have some type of incentive, because $400,000, $432,000 is quite significant. And what we're saying is we want you to activate this space, but we're going to tax you $432,000 in effect. So I think that could possibly stifle investment in activating these type of squares in the future. So we should be looking at ways to, one, provide some type of discount and say, okay, well, if you're going to activate this space to make it more pedestrian and friendly and can show other alternative ways of people getting there, like, you know, by providing, you know, clear cycle ways to get into that area, or provide cycle parking, you know, like bike racks for people to you know, lock up their bikes,
or possible lockers now that they use for certain bikes where people can put all their gear in, things like that. I don't know, to show alternatives. I think you touched on that a bit, Dylan. I think then we've got to look at that for the future and look at ways of it. And it's not going to work everywhere, so you can't have a normal shop on Build Road saying, well, you know, I want to turn my backyard into outdoor dining, so I want to lose the car spot and get a discount. That's a bit different. Do you know what I mean? So this is a bit more of an area-wide precinct that Chinatown is encouraging. So I think we should just keep that in mind. The other thing I think we should keep in mind is, you know, in developments we now require visitor parking spots, and the amount of visitor parking spots should be, I think, reviewed, because at the moment, the problem with the visitor parking spots is they serve a purpose, but you might have 10 in one of these developments. Five of them end up caged up with people dumping their gear there. The other five are really not accessible because people tend to park on the street and then want to, you know, won't buzz and wait there for someone to open the gate for them to drive and park in the visitor spot. So my suggestion is there that, do we forego, like, do we have a possible policy in the future where we say, you know, out of the 10 spots, 50% have to be via a VPA contribution back to council, so we create central public spaces which are more accessible than those that are locked up underground, and you still have the other five, for example. So that's just my comment. Councillor Hull, you indicated you want to speak or no?
Yes, I certainly concur with those remarks you just made, Mr. Mayor. I think there is a need to address the parking, issues in Burwood LGA. Whilst I support giving businesses, you know, the opportunities to open up, you know, their dining potential by, you know, expanding onto the street. It does have a cost in terms of removing, you know, parking opportunities for the public. Particularly in Burwood, where the parking is increasingly becoming a scarce commodity, albeit, you know, there are parking stations, envisaged or under construction. It is a tight proposition at the moment in Burwood. So I would greatly encourage council to look into the use of investigating greater parking opportunities for the public, particularly when, you know, council has been is the beneficiary of, you know, some $432,000 in this case to look at enhancing parking in the LGA. I think we need to be looking at parking spots as a priority.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other speakers? Write a reply, Councillor. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously, I believe. No? Oh, sorry. So all those in favour? Those against? So you got that? Next item is 89/22, which is a voluntary planning agreement, Build RSL Club. Do I have a mover? Been moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Esper. Speakers, questions? Councillor Manor?
It says that over $15 million, right? That's the VPA for this application. So that's not just monetary, that's also in kind, right? Can we just have a breakdown of what things in kind are, please?
Fab, I'll hand over to the Acting GM.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I could put this to our Director of City Strategy.
The VPA, as it's presented, includes a range of benefits, and the applicant, for example, includes road widening on George Street, and the applicant has included a land value associated with that property. there are other items, including some of the schedules, for example, public arts, where they've said they'll be doing a public art strategy to the value of about $350,000. What we've clearly done within this VPA is separated out those works which they're undertaking because they're related to the development, and those works which are identified as public infrastructure works within our 712 contributions plan. And it's only those works within our 712 contribution plan that we will allow them to offset against their normal infrastructure contributions. In total, it's about $6 million worth of works in kind that we'll be undertaking. And that will be a range of things. There's the widening of George Street. There's an intersection upgrade and traffic lights to the intersection of George and Shaftesbury. They will be doing works to upgrade all of the footpaths from standard concrete to pavers, installing multifunction poles. They'll be resheeting the entirety of Dean, Marmaduke and George Street, and also doing some enhanced surface treatments at the Dean Street and Marmaduke Street intersection. And I think I've covered everything there. And those works amount to about $6 million in round numbers, and that's what we're accepting as a works in kind that will discount against their normal 712 contributions.
There's also, just to add, Councillor, before I come back to you, there's also land dedications which actually have a value, because, I mean, while they're giving away 391 square metres of land on George Street and Shaftesbury Road, another 154 square metres fronting Marmaduke Street, 375 square metres fronting George Street for a road widening, those type of things. Question, Councillor Robbins?
Yeah, sorry, there's a couple ones. So that's $6 million in kind, so that the remaining is a cash injection to the council?
I think it's public domain works, but I'll hand over to GM.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are a number of other areas where the developer is planning to contribute. Some of them, like Dylan mentioned, public art. But Dylan, do you want to add anything to that?
No, just to confirm, it's not a cash contribution. It is contribution of that land and the associated land value that we're dealing with.
In saying that, there's section... What do they call them now? 147 contributions that they still got to make? Is it
712?
712 contributions, sorry. They used to be 94 before, yeah. section 11, 712 contributions, which this is excludes that. So they'd still be making, like.
Oh, so there's a further one coming.
Oh, with every development application, there'll be a Section 712 applications, which is the old, like, open space contribution.
Yep. I guess the other thing is, just given the scale and the size of this development, I think it would be beneficial if council were to get a briefing on this whole thing, if possible, just because I know there's a lot in here. I think there's a pretty significant change to the face of Build Council. So I think if we could get a briefing on this entire development, that would be fantastic.
Yep. So what we're dealing with is just the monetary. So the actual. So if Council refuses this tonight, for example, it won't change anything with the DA.
Yeah, that's fine. It's an aside.
I'm just trying to, yeah. With regards to briefings on DAs and that, I don't know what's the advice from staff. Dylan, I don't think it's an issue. Maybe we can do a couple. Oh, we did one for the plaza. Yeah, you could do that for this. So noted?
Yeah.
Noted, Councillor. Any other questions? Councillor Crichton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question is, with the in-kind benefits, I take it that obviously Club Build constructs all those works as listed in the report, and then does Council then pick up the maintenance of those items, in particular the delivery of the public domain works for all frontages comprising of footpath paving as detailed in the VPA? It's a very big block, so do we then step in and look after the maintenance? And my second question would be, with the public artwork, do we then become the owner of the public art? There are three pieces, I believe. Not the one inside the foyer, but the other stuff. Thank you.
It goes into the detail, so I will hand over to Dylan.
Thank you, John Runger. In terms of those works in kind, within the VPA, there's various mechanisms which I guess are there to protect council in terms of the quality of those works being undertaken. So there is a bond that they're required to give us to up to, I think it's 80% of the total value of those works, and we release that bond as they're delivered, and they go beyond their 12-month on maintenance period. Beyond that, they then come back to us as our assets, but it comes back to us in confidence, been constructed to our standards, it's been done in a workmanlike manner, and we've had a period of maintenance so we can monitor the quality of what's been delivered over a certain period of time before we take on board that asset. And that's very detailed in the VPA, and there's a number of mechanisms in there to really protect the interests of both parties in that process. In terms of the public art, it is in line with our public art policy in terms of public art on private development. So there's the, I think it's a sculpture on the George Street Shaftesbury intersection, a sort of hanging orb feature on the Dean Street Marble Duke, and then there's a waterfall feature down the Shaftesbury Road. They're all integrated with the development, so they may remain the property of the Burwood RSL, albeit they're all visible from different public vantage points. And that's consistent with our public art policy.
Councillor Cutcher?
Yeah, look, I've had a couple of people who have sort of approached me with some questions about this, so I just want to kind of get my head around what are the implications here. So we're talking about an area that, you know, that's under development, sort of broadly, it's fairly pedestrianised at the moment, and it's right up against the railway station, but there's only the western access point to the railway station. I know that there's a bit of work being talked about, there's some funding being applied for to open up the railway entryway onto Dean Street, so that it sort of change things there. But just the implications or the impact, we were talking about road widening and kind of opening this area that's highly pedestrianised at the moment up to vehicle traffic. In such close proximity to the railway station, what are the implications for the pedestrianisation of that area? Have there been any studies done in relation to that, and have there been any discussions or opportunities pursued around opening up further entry points to the railway station to encourage people to visit the venue, visit the site by public transport?
I'm going to hand over to the GM. I'm just going to remind councillors we're dealing with a VPA, so these are a bit more going into the detail, maybe for a briefing on the DA stuff.
I guess it's just the land dedications are in the VPA. Yeah. So if we say no to this and we don't end up with the land dedications, then, you know, what's that all mean? But I guess, yeah, that I see that as a...
If council says, and I'm going to hand over to the general manager and he can... And if council, us voting on this voluntary planning agreement, from experience and from what I understand, and that can be clarified, has no bearing on the DA. It just means council foregoes this space or these dedications or whatever it is. It's a tool, a VPA tool, voluntary planning agreement tool, is a way the council can obviously do an in-kind exchange, or there's a contribution paid in line with our policy and so forth. But so whether we vote for this or not, won't affect that type of thing. But I think that's point taken, so we need to raise that in the briefing. But I might hand over to the GM to further clarify.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And yes, there's a level of detail that we can probably get into in more depth as part of a briefing on that particular DA. Definitely around that area, pedestrianisation is something that is important, and the trial that we're doing currently on Dean Street is an example of that. In relation to the impact that the DA has on that, I might just hand over to Dylan.
Yeah, just on that point, I guess the extent of traffic modelling, traffic assessment with his application has been very detailed, and discussions with Transport for New South Wales are actually ongoing at the present moment in time to seek a resolution on that. I think in terms of the ability to, achieve a new connection to the train station on the back of this development, I think that would be very difficult for us to achieve, given the, you know, the increase in pedestrian movement associated specifically with the development. I think it would be hard for us to justify a warrant that there's a need to have a new station, access to the station at that southern end of the station platform. I think our opportunity for us is to work with Sydney Trains and Metro on that Dean Street precinct, and I think there's a very real and, to all intents and purposes, quite easily a deliverable option about having a new station entry onto that Dean Street. And you might remember in some of the visualisations we've shown in Dean Street, we have that opportunity there. And I think that would take the pressure away from particularly that Railway Parade Burwood Road corner and that immediate access point out onto Burwood Road, where there is really a quite a high level of pedestrian activity. And I think that would be the spot where we can more easily achieve a solution. Having seen some of the upgrades being done, councillors might be familiar with Redfern Station. They're doing some new station platform work. That infrastructure is very expensive and takes a long time to deliver. It's a significant undertaking. And I think I would have to be fairly honest in saying I think there will be a limited warrant for that type of delivery or that station access, given that it would be so hard to achieve and building bridges over, a pedestrian bridge over those station crossings to get to the platforms. I would see it being a hard proposition for us to be able to justify back to Transport for New South Wales, particularly linked to this development in its entirety.
Speakers? Councillor Manor?
Yeah, no, just a question. It says here...
A question?
1,250 car spaces. It's a huge amount of spaces. Is any of those dedicated to us as for use?
Not as suggested in the report, no.
No, okay.
Councillor, did you wish to speak? No. Seconder? Any other speakers? Speakers against? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? Declare it carried. Okay, next item is the review of the planning framework delivery of public art and private developments endorsement for public exhibition. It's been moved by Councillor Crichton, seconded by Councillor Esper. Speakers? I've got a question, if I can. Just on page 141... It says their minimum of 1% of the total cost of the development is to be allocated to public art budget. So if you've got a $20 million, my question is, if there's a $20 million project, and so the contribution is $200,000, and, it's $100,000 to do a public art mural or something on the wall, and then there's another $95,000 to do something else, which is... So what I'm trying to get at is, how do you determine that figure? Like, is it a set 1% or is it up to a 1%? That's just my question. Is there, do the staff sort of look at it from a project point of view or?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dylan?
Thank you, General Manager. Look, I think the 1% that we've selected there is really a bit of a benchmark that we've picked based on what other councillors adopt. Some are at 0.5%, some are at 2%. 1% feels appropriate, not least because it's just in the middle, but also I think it gives enough budget for an applicant, a developer, to go away and actually provide something meaningful within a site, and also something that's going to have a certain level of weight, heft, and I think impact in relation to the overall scale of the project. We do have to be a little bit careful in that, 1%, it is a guide. So if an applicant came back and it was slightly below that, but they were providing a good scheme, we wouldn't hold out and said you must provide absolutely 1%. And likewise, if they're going slightly over that, again, we would be supportive of that. So it's really giving, I think, a clear indication of our level of expectation that we expect for the public art contribution on site, and a clear benchmark that we all know we can work towards.
Point taken. Could I also, I'm just going to pass these photos around of a recent trip to Canberra. I might pass them to the councillors, they can have a quick look, and then give them to you, Dylan. Yeah. Only because I think that we've got to change the mindset, and I might comment on that when we speak on the issue. Councillor, did you wish to speak? Councillor Cronin. Councillor Esper. Any other speakers? Look, I'm just going to speak in favour of the motion, and I've just passed some photos around. I think the mindset's got to be that public art can also be built, and I mean, feel free, Dylan, to share those with the team. Public art, if you look at those photos, is part of it is actually part of the building design. So it's actually a part of the building feature. It doesn't have to just be a statue. It doesn't just have to be... you know, certain thing. There's actually one there where we walked past in a new area that was redeveloped, a new precinct in Canberra, where we did a bit of a tour, and it actually had the door handles designed as butterflies, like these large colourful butterflies, for these office doors. So it could be as simple as that. I think also in that same building, I think from memory, I think George was with me, and Pascal, did you go on that trip in Canberra when we went to that? I think up the top they had old car exhausts for the actual vents, for like aircon vents or something, that looked like these old car exhausts that were coming out of the building. It just looked so groovy. Anyway, in saying that, and then there's obviously sections of metal piece in these buildings that are quite significant as well, that have metal pieces coming out of the actual building, which is a public art display, but it's actually part of the design of the building. And the reason I'm using that as an example, because I think we should be looking at changing the mindset of developers to suggest that it's not an added cost. It's actually something that you should be doing as part of your design. Write a reply, councillor. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously, I believe. next item is the draft unity plan of management endorsement for public exhibition and public hearing. Being moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Esper. Did you wish to speak? Oh, I've just got a quick question, if I can, before we get into speaking. My question is, in this report, it actually says here that council office / commercial space was dedicated, plus 55 car parking spaces, and community and public domain space. It doesn't list the square metres of space. So can I ask the general manager, through him, to the relevant staff, on how many square metres of community land / commercial office space was dedicated? And my second question is, what was the total value of that as part of the VPA?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I might go to Michaela if I need some more detail. Essentially, as part of the VPA, the dedication back to council was approximately 9,000 square metres. There were almost 800 square metres in the public domain of Unity Place itself that was given back to council, approximately 4,500 square metres in the admin and community hub areas, about 520 square metres of commercial space on the ground floor, and a few other bits and pieces, car parking and whatnot. So it added up to about 9,000. Now, when it was given to council at that time, the developer contribution, if you like, was approximately $23 million. Following that, we had it valued in 2020, so just as the fit-out was being completed, and it was valued at $42.8 million.
Okay. Other questions? Speakers? Councillor Mann?
Yeah, no, I just want to congratulate council on all the hard work, working closely with the community to make this, to get to this stage. It's good news. Good work.
Councillor Esper, did you wish to speak? Any speakers against? Any other speakers? Put the motion, all those in favour. Those against? Declare that carried unanimously. Build
Park Plan and Management adoption, which is 92/22. Been moved by Councillor Crichton, seconded by Councillor Esper. How come every time I look up to see who's moving, everyone puts their head down? Okay. So would you wish to speak? Any questions? Do I have any questions from anyone on this? Speakers against? Write a reply, Councillor. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously. Draft codes of conduct and procedure for the administration of the codes of conduct endorsement for public exhibition 93/22. Been moved by Councillor Espar, seconded by Councillor Manor. Speakers? Questions? Speakers against? Write a reply, Councillor. Put the motion. All those in favour, those against, declare that carried unanimously, was it? We're just for their recording of the minutes. Yep. No objections. Okay. 94/22. Draft interaction between council officials policy endorsement for public exhibition. Been moved by Councillor Espar, seconded by Councillor Manor. Speakers, questions? Yeah, Councillor.
So it's just in relation to the concept of appropriate and inappropriate interactions. And I couldn't see anything in there that sort of would relate to like a public interest disclosure or something of that nature. I just wonder if that's something that ought to be captured in there.
Was there a relevant page that you had raised, Councillor, or no?
I remember looking at it earlier, and I'm thinking page 9 of the document within the business papers, but I'm just trying to find it now. I'll see if I can pinpoint
it for you. I'll hand over to the GM.
So just to clarify, Councillor, disclosures in relation to interactions between council officials and...
I guess the question is if a discussion takes place, are there any protections for a, for instance, a staff member who makes a public interest disclosure to a councillor? Obviously there's implications under the code of conduct there. So the question just is, can or ought that be captured within this document in some way that protects a staff member in particular? From making a statement that they felt there was no other recourse available to them.
Yep. No, I understand the question now. I might hand over to Tanya for that one.
Thank you, and through you, Mr. Mayor. If I've understood the question correctly, public interest disclosures is covered under a completely separate policy, which actually is due for refreshment. So we will be bringing that back to council. Normally we try and refresh our policies at least every 4 years unless the policy document states something different. So for instance, things that we want to bring back to you in the first year of the term of a council, which is why we're bringing several together tonight, which are part of a suite of the conduct related ones. The PID legislation has actually been updated, but it has not commenced yet. I attended a meeting last week with a briefing on the current Act, and we believe that will come into force sometime next year, around about maybe the middle or latter part of the year. So we're going to recommend that we defer updating that policy unless there's any urgency attached to particular requirements that Council is interested in pursuing at this stage.
Okay, thank you. Noted. I think there's a certain, as Tanya mentioned, I believe there's a certain procedure that staff have been trained with on how to do a public disclosure referral. There's a number of options. I think one is it comes to the mayor's office. The other one, it could go to the ombudsman. I think and they've got protected. They're protected under that, from what I believe. But I think noted for the staff to look at, Councillor. Any other questions? Speakers against? Write a reply, Councillor. Put the motion. All those in favour? Aye. Those against? I declare that carried unanimously.
Item 95/22, which is the draft gifts and benefits policy. Been moved by Councillor Espar, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Speakers? Questions? Speakers against? Write a reply, Councillor. Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously. 96/22, which is the half yearly report. Being moved by Councillor Espar, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Speakers? Do I have questions? Speakers against? Write a reply, Councillor. Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously. 97/22, which is the annual referral of the annual financial reports. Been moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Do I have questions? Speakers for? Speakers against? Write a reply. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried unanimously. Item 98/22, which is the report as at the 31st of August for the investment report. Been moved by Councillor Espar, seconded by Councillor Manor. Question from Councillor Crichton.
That's okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can I just ask for a little bit of detail about the interest rates for the term deposits as depicted on page 578? There's just a really big range, and I understand that interest rates have been moving as set by the RBA, but there's a really big range from 0.80 right up to 3.7 for our term deposits. So just a little bit of information would be helpful.
I'll hand over to the GM, who I think our finance.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The reason behind the differences in interest rate is likely due to just when investments mature and are then renewed at a new interest rate. Perhaps Wayne could provide a bit more detail and confirm if that range is due to that reason alone, or if there's anything else.
It's just clarify, is that the reason, Wayne? Does that answer the question?
I think so. Could I just hear from the director?
Yep.
Thank you.
Well, at the time of, I'll throw you, Mr. General Manager, at the time of investing back in August 21, for argument's sake, for the Westpac one, the interest rates were, the best interest rate was 0.75%, and that was on the expectation the Reserve Bank wasn't going to move the interest rates for till 2024. So we locked in at that rate, a good rate, we thought, at that time. However, with the movement of the interest rates, we have missed out. However, we can review that and break it, but if we do break it, we'll probably lose some principal. Yeah.
Any other questions? Sorry, just if I can add just on that. So when does that term expire? Do we know?
30th of August, 24.
Sorry. Okay. Any other questions? Speakers against? Right. Write a reply. Who moved it? I can't see. Who is that move? Councillor Espar. Write a reply. Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, we declare that carried unanimously. Next item is reports of committees. RC9/22, Build Local Traffic Committee. 582, which is the minutes of the previous meeting, is it? Which dealt with the Daisy Street car park. Okay. Mobility. It was a mobility request. So have I got a mover? Been moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Espar.
Do I have questions? Speakers for, against, write a reply. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously. RC 10/22, which is the Build Local Traffic Committee Extraordinary Meeting held in September 2022 to deal with the Build Festival. Been moved by Councillor Crichton, seconded by Councillor Esper. Speakers for, against, questions? Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, declare that carried unanimously. Next item is NM 3/22, which is notice of motion by Councillor Kutcher. So, Councillor Kutcher, I suggest you're going to move that motion, and then I've got to ask for a seconder before we can speak.
So I move the council vows to protect urban habitat wherever possible, particularly in our highly built-up urban centres. Two, notes the presence of an occupied nesting hollow in a tree that will need to be removed for the construction of council's proposed urban park, arts and cultural centre. Three, requires the general manager to commission a more detailed assessment of the trees on the subject site, including an assessment of the structural integrity of the tree designated as tree three in the arboriculturalist's report. And four, requires the general manager to consider any alternatives to the removal of trees on site that may be of significance as urban habitat and to make any amendments to the DA currently under assessment as may be necessary for this purpose.
Do I have a seconder?
I'll second it.
This has been seconded by Councillor Robinson. Councillor, the floor's yours.
I guess I just want to make it very clear that this motion doesn't really require council to do much more, doesn't require the general manager to do much more than obtain a report and then to consider the implications of that report. I think it's really important that we as a local council and as one of the primary developers of the town centre at the moment, that we're leading by example, that we note that there's some information that's been presented in our DA that's clearly incorrect, and that we need to do what we can to inform ourselves as fully and as thoroughly as we can as to the implications of that. I noted, and I'm interested to hear more about the comments that were made in the staff report about some other mitigation measures that might be available. I am pleased to note that the ecologist has been engaged to undertake the ecological assessment of the habitat value of the identified tree. So I'm pleased to know that there's work being done on this, and that it's that it's not a fait accompli that there'll be damage to this habitat. But there's clearly something that needs to be done here. Obtaining that more thorough assessment. And then deciding what to do with that information is the proposal. I ask the councillors join me in insisting that we lead by example as a developer in this area.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Robinson. Do I have any other speakers? I just got a question, and while I support the intent, I think we're already doing, like, that's going to be my argument anyway, but... my question is, because there's four points there, and I sort of went through them in detail. My question is, what is council doing in response to this issue, and what has council done?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as Councillor Kutcher mentioned, we've engaged an ecologist to provide a more detailed detailed overview of the hollow and the cockatoos in there, as well as a second opinion, if you like, on the health of the tree. Perhaps Dylan can provide some more detail with the latest updates.
Thank you, General Manager. Look, there's probably two findings that have come out of that report. Firstly, in relation to the tree itself, it's a lemon-scented gum, which isn't a locally occurring native species at all. It's actually an introduced species from North Queensland. So in terms of, I guess, the ecological value of the tree itself, aside from the habitat issue, there's no particular legislative protection requiring its retention at all. The second aspect relates to the two cockatoos. The ecologist has confirmed that there is a pair of cockatoos who are nesting in that tree currently, and based on their observed behaviour, it's likely they are using it for nesting, which would, I guess, align with the kind of nesting period, which runs from around August through to January. But again, the cockatoo itself, aside from being a native species and also protected as a native species, it's not recorded as a vulnerable or endangered species. They're relatively common and a species that are thriving in Australia at present. So again, there's no legislative requirement on us to do anything there in terms of not impacting directly the habitat. The ecologists have recommended a number of measures to us. Firstly, removing the tree outside of any breeding season or any activity associated with that, and also having a fauna handler or spotter catcher on site if and when the tree is removed, and taking several procedural approaches whilst they are removing it, and also looking at the replacement of that tree hollow, either relocating the tree hollow elsewhere into maybe sort of Burwood Park, where it's has a higher quality habitat value. The tree at the moment, being by the car park, by a busy road, isn't seen as particularly high quality habitat value, albeit there are two birds nesting in there at the moment. So they'll be looking to provide some nesting boxes in other more appropriate locations, such as Burwood Park, possibly Wongle Park, and even including one within this development as well. And they've also made some broader comments around the replanting on site that we're providing in the order of 42 tree species, the majority of which are selected as native species, and they've provided some advice around providing a broader range of native tree species within the redevelopment site to offer a better ecological mix of trees within the site as well.
Okay. And could I just ask a follow-on question? Has Council got a track record on, you know, when we're doing developments, dealing with wildlife and rehabilitating them to new areas, like we're currently undertaking a process of redevelopment in Burwood Park? What was the process we went through on relocation of, for example, the ducks and the turtles? And
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I might hand over to our Director of City Assets for the detail, but I believe wires were engaged. George?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. We had a specialist, a fauna specialist engaged to undertake the removal of those animals and relocate them, the ones that were suitable to be relocated, or treat the others humanely as required by legislation, and wires were engaged in that process.
Is there any other questions? Any speakers? Look, I support the intent, Councillor. I won't be supporting the motion because I don't see anything in there that's actually new that we're not doing. If the statement was just that we protect our urban habitat wherever possible, particularly in our highly built-up urban centres, I think we could have a discussion around that. If I look at notes, the presence of an occupied nesting hollow, okay, well, we know that. I mean, why do we need to note it? Like, what's the purpose of noting it? I mean, I just don't. I think that's noted as part of the DA process. From what I understand, the panel has actually asked for further information on that issue. Three, requires the General Manager to commission a more detailed assessment of the trees. I think we've done that, and we've just gotten a second one, and we've got an ecologist report. I think getting a third one, it's just time consuming. I can't see it's going to give us any other answer than what we're getting. And that the general manager consider any alternatives to the removal of trees on site that may be of significance as urban habitat. I think the reports we've received as part of that in the DA have already answered that. And I don't believe, and I think Dylan just reiterated that now, there's no significant trees there that, and you're getting rid of 19 trees, but we're planting 45 others to then start the process again, which has been a three-year process. While wouldn't be an issue if it was going to have the desired result, but to sort of delay the process again just to look at it, which I think from what I understand from the existing reports and the follow-up reports that were obtained that were requested via the panel, came to the same conclusion. And council's got a track record, so I don't think we're going to go remove that tree now while they're nesting there. I don't think anyone's suggesting that. So on that basis, I won't be supporting, because I just think it's just going to drag on again on something that we already know. I think we have already done the work on, so that's the reason why I won't be supporting it. But I respect your intent, so I'm not against the intent, but I guess the method. Any other speakers? You'll write a reply, Councillor.
Look, thanks, Mayor. Thanks, Councillor. Thank you, staff, for engaging with me on this issue. I mean, I think it's about what we value as a community. It's about what we value as a council. And I understand that there's work that's being undertaken, and I understand that the issue has progressed. It's probably progressed somewhat since I wrote the notice of motion. In saying that, there's community interest in the issue, and there's not a lot of information available to the community on the issue. So providing some information and having this discussion at council will hopefully help resolve some of that. I'm very pleased to hear that discussion's taking place about nesting boxes and where might be appropriate places to install those. In fact, I think it would be a good outcome if we were to take the opportunity to install not just a single replacement nesting box, but think about where we can put other nesting boxes and just make that part of our business going forward. I think that would be a good thing. And if this hollow can be retained and re-sited somewhere else, then that's a good thing as well. So I think generally speaking, it's been valuable having the discussion. Obviously, we're not going to be able to win them all when it comes to saving the cockatoos. But I appreciate everybody taking the time and energy to have the discussion. I will still ask people to support the motion nevertheless. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. So I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? So Councillor Faker, Councillor Hull, Councillor Crichton, Councillor Esper, Councillor Manor. So the motion's lost. Are you looking at me, Michelle, or the screen? Because I've got contacts on, you know. So are you okay? Thanks, Councillor. Anyway, thanks for the debate. Now, I think we're right, Michelle? So the next item is obviously the two confidential items. So I might just go into closed session, and then we'll just...